Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joe Foljam. This is The Sandman, Issue 56, World's End, Part 6, World's End. So let's get to the cover. Again, if you're reading the collected issues, these are at the front, and they're fairly small in the World's End collection, which is too bad because they're great. This is the one where you can see a face over the In at World's End with their finger pointing at the sliver of the moon. In mine, it's immediately before the first page of the comic starts in World's End. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that this is actually a reverse image of the first time we've seen the World's End on the cover, and that makes the black sliver of a moon actually look like the proper white sliver of a moon that it should look like.
Mm.
A cool little art thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like we've got Morpheus in the sky there. I'm not convinced it's him, but that's where I would put my money on if I were betting.
I think it's the guy, the Brandt.
You think it's Brandt?
Yeah, I think it's Brandt. Looks like Brandt.
I don't think his hair looks too fuzzy. See the hair up top? It's got that shaggy feel that Dream
Brandt's
has.
Brandt's hair hangs in front of his eyes a little bit.
Yeah, but this is very shaggy. But it's okay, we can disagree.
I think it's Brandt.
Our listeners can let us know what they think.
Yeah, looks just like Brandt.
Maybe Brandt is Morpheus. That's the big secret. This cover is photography, collage, and Macintosh computer.
We don't specify what kind of computer we make things with anymore, right? Back then, they'd say we made it with a Macintosh because it was like the computers were also different.
Yeah,
but
I guess
now
so.
Now you'd be like, I used a computer.
Yeah, when did Photoshop 1 come out? Hold on one sec. Came out in 1988 was Photoshop 1.0, so I guess he was using it on a Macintosh. These days now, it makes almost no difference. You run a Mac because you like the Mac OS and the way it handles things, and you run a Windows OS because you like that, but you run the program. Photoshop on a Mac and Photoshop on a PC are pretty much the same thing.
Cool.
Which is probably why these days you don't care. Let's get inside. So we had a bit of a cliffhanger at the end of last issue. Brandt wanted an explanation for what was going on at the Inn of World's End, why they were all there, and the hostess mentioned that she knew.
Actually, I do.
Yeah. And then starts off with saying, Clurican's had enough.
Immediately back to business. Yep. Clurican is too drunk.
Yeah.
He is very drunk.
He is. His eyes are rolling up and he's drooling and he can't even keep his head up. But he's still got his hand on his mug.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a professional drinker right there. It's not something to be proud of, though. Just going to note that as an ex-drinker.
So Brandt is like, lady, you can't just, say that you know and then change the subject.
Yep.
Excuse me.
And so she answers, this place is the inn at the end of all worlds. You came here because there's something happening and you'll leave when the storm's over. That's it. Just basically states the obvious. It's just what you see it as. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing. This is how it works.
People get stuck between worlds and we offer them hospitality.
Mm-hmm. And Clurican wakes up and asks for a Jeroboam of crisp white wine. I had to look up what this was because I didn't know. It's named after an ancient Jewish king, actually, Jeroboam. It's a wine bottle with a capacity 4 times larger than that of an ordinary bottle. A magnum being a double-sized bottle. I didn't know this. And there's wine bottle sizes that go all the way up to, I believe, 30 times the size or even 40 times, and they're just giant bottles of wine.
So a Jeroboam is pretty close to your modern box wine, because box wines are usually 4.5 bottles or 5 bottles.
Oh, okay.
The smaller boxes are 4 bottles.
Yeah. A Jeroboam is 3 liters, a wine bottle being 750 milliliters.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that is in American measurements. I call it American because they're the only ones stuck with the old-fashioned measurements.
With imperial?
Yeah.
There's like one other country, isn't there?
One tiny little country, yeah.
Yeah.
They're just sucking up to America.
They're like, we want America to like us.
Yeah. We also like inches and feet. They make sense.
Yeah. Screw science.
And they decline, giving him more. He's drunk. He's not having anything else. And he says that's perfectly reasonable and then passes out.
That's perfectly reasonable. Thunk.
Then she explains what a reality storm is.
Yeah, and Brandt is a little peeved because he doesn't like the idea of reality being fragile.
Mm-hmm.
Reality is huge and big and solid, according to him, and it can't be, broken from time to time.
Right. And she asks him, how did you get here, Brant Tucker? And he remembers the big beastie he saw that made him drive off the road.
Mm-hmm. And the freak snowstorm in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, and the talking hedgehog, probably.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the talking hedgehog.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that hedgehog?
Saved his life, made him get up and keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Allowed him to get to the inn.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wish that hedgehog had been a recurring character. Wish his story had been about the hedgehog and not Brant.
I mean, if Neil ever listens to this, maybe he'll do what you ask.
Neil, bring me back that hedgehog.
And then we get a glimpse of just how big the inn is. We haven't really seen this before, but it looks like there are a lot of people here. It seems to go on pretty much forever.
Yeah, I think it's infinite.
Mm-hmm. When a world ends, there's always something left over. A story, perhaps, or a vision, or a hope. This inn is a refuge after the lights go out for a while.
The young sailor wonders if they're dead. But mm-hmm. No, dead people do come there from time to time, but they're not all dead.
Mm-hmm. And Chiron, the centaur, notes that he's never seen the inn so full. He's been here a few times before. He's very long-lived.
He's never been so packed.
So he's like, yeah, this is a big deal. Whatever the reason is that we're here, it's a big deal. And then we get to see more of the people in the background, including, I feel like this is two groups of villain henchmen squaring off with their costumes. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like a Venture Brothers with the Monarch versus Baron Underbites guys.
Yeah, one group here we got are the Crawdaddies.
Yeah.
Crawdaddies in their little Crawdaddy suits.
Yeah.
And then we got the completely inexplicable metal pants dudes.
Yeah.
With goggles.
Metal pants, pointy hats.
I know what they are.
What are they?
They're gnomes with robot legs.
They're too tall for gnomes. Oh, you're saying that they're normally...
No, it's the robot legs. Oh. They're making them tall.
So they normally have little tiny legs.
But they got beefy arms, and they got gnome hats, but they've changed it so they're like more...
Right.
Like flying...
Right.
Flying caps, so they're kind of still gnomish.
Cyber gnomes?
Not cyber, because they're probably using steampunk machines.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't skip arm day, but I guess they skipped leg day. They just said, we'll skip leg day and we'll make robot legs.
That's okay. It. That's who they are. They're clearly gnomes.
Okay. I'm down with that.
Anyway, they're locked in an argument with the Crawdads.
Mm-hmm.
The Crawdaddies.
And then Charlene wants to know why the stories. And Chiron says, well, it's just a tradition. This is what travelers do. They exchange stories. If you go all the way back to Canterbury Tales, one of the first actual English language stories that was ever told, that was about a bunch of travelers telling stories to each other.
Mm.
So it goes as far back as at least the English tradition of storytelling and getting together.
I mean,
I'm sure it goes far, much further back. She also complains that these are all boys' stories.
Because they are boys' stories.
Yeah, she's right. And she points it out. She says a swashbuckling adventure, a sea story, a gangster story. I think the gangster story is one that we missed while Brant was hearing the president's story. Because I can't think of one that was a gangster story.
It's the president's story that's the gangster story.
She didn't hear it. She then asks later, when you were upstairs, what did you hear?
Oh, yeah.
To Brant. So I think she heard a gangster story while Brant was hearing the Prez story.
Hmm. Okay.
Which is kind of cool. It means that, you know, nothing happened to her when he was getting his little thing. She continued to exist and hear things.
Mm-hmm. And the sailor, she says like, well, my story is a woman's story.
Yeah.
But Charlene's like, no, the whole point in your story is that there weren't women in it.
Yeah.
And that it was a ship full of sailors and it has a giant dick thrusting out of the ocean, I agree with.
Yeah, the big monster was totally a dick. Well, not totally. It was pretty long for a dick. But yeah, the serpent is a dick metaphor for sure.
I mean, there aren't any real women in any of the stories I've heard tonight. We're just pretty figures in the background to be loved or lost or avoided or obeyed or whatever.
And so Chiron says, okay, there were lots of stories I didn't hear, but how about you tell us your story? And then we find out Charlene thinks she doesn't have any stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Which is odd because, like, a lot of the stories we're hearing are people telling other stories that they've heard from other people. They're not necessarily, here's a thing that happened to me.
Mm.
A lot of the times it's like, here's a story somebody told me and I will retell it, which I guess means she hasn't heard a lot of stories worth retelling as well as not experiencing a lot of stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is her realization that her life's been pretty boring up till this point.
Yeah.
And that's what we get out of her monologue following this.
Oh, what I find a little weird. So, okay. So she basically describes a situation where she's unhappy at work.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't like her ex-husband. She doesn't like her relationship with her ex-husband. She, you know, doesn't care about anything in her life. And she was going back to visit her folks with Brant, who she works with, when they get in the accident, that she had actually, like, kind of hooked up with Brant at one point at a Christmas party, but they were both drunk and they both kind of pretended it never happened. Part of the thing I didn't particularly like this issue, and part of what I don't really love about her contribution to the story mm-hmm. is that I think what she points out about them all being boys' stories is totally valid.
Yeah.
But she's kind of set up as a, to me, it feels a little bit like, why are you criticizing the stories when you're not a person who has your own stories? Like, okay, you didn't like stories, give your own story. When it's like, even if she doesn't have a story, I still think her criticism that they're all boy stories is valid, since there were other women in the group of people at the tavern who could have told their stories.
Right. But maybe this is her story. This is a story of how Charlene Mooney stopped living in the universe she lived in and went off to find something exciting to do.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, it feels like her super valid criticism of the gender of the characters and then having her unable to tell her own story
mm-hmm.
feels a little bit like it could be interpreted as like, oh, well, you don't have the right to criticize, which is like,
I don't get the feeling that that's what Neil would be saying.
No, I don't know, especially but I feel like that's a take you could take from this.
It is. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's done perfectly well. But I'll note that Neil does try to do male stories than female stories. He likes to flip back and forth. He's mentioned this specifically, that mm-hmm. he considers some of his stories to be men's stories and some of his stories to be women's stories. And in The Sandman, he tried to alternate back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious in this one that he made... Well, I don't know if it's obvious that he made the decision, but he at least realized that he had written men's stories all the way through here. And I think with this little self-realization at the end, either he's going, oops, or he's going, yes, that was what I meant to do.
Yes.
It's one of those two things.
But what I guess what I take from it is that because he's never been explicit about that within the text
mm-hmm.
until this moment, it feels like this character, at least like what I could see it being taken as, is like those nerd guys who don't see the disparity of men and women in storylines, who don't see that in comics, right? Who those guys who are like, oh, you fake geek girls, why are you reading our comics, or why are mm-hmm. you complaining about our comics? To have a female character within the text come in and say, complain about it, but then not be able to like offer her anything of worth of her own after she complains about it, if that makes sense, feels like a little mm-hmm. like it could be feeding right into that kind of that toxically dude culture about keeping women out of comics or don't let women have any control over the medium. If that makes sense.
I think the end of where she storms away makes it pretty clear where Neil sides on this, because Brant's like, woman, huh? And then everybody else glares at him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she's got a valid criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, Neil wrote that criticism. And then Neil wrote Brant not getting it. Neil wrote everybody trying to dismiss her, including other women.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if anything, that's what happens with comics. Right? Comics are normally men's stories.
Yeah, and you've
and got, people make excuses for them.
I guess it makes sense then the one woman character that she talks to about it who dismisses her is a woman character who very specifically lives in a very masculine way, like as an incredibly mm-hmm. non-feminine woman character. So she's like those like, I'm one of the boys kind
yeah.
of people. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. I can see it through that lens. Yeah.
And if anything, this could be Neil saying to women, let's get you writing more stories. There should be more women going out there and writing stories.
That makes sense.
And perhaps an invitation
mm-hmm.
to join these other people in learning stories and then retelling them.
Mm.
I agree with you that it might not be pulled off very well. I don't think it's very clear.
Yeah.
And I'm just guessing at it. But I think the gendered stories is a thing that Neil's been aware of through the entire run of The Sandman.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and the way that, yeah, the different stories go back and forth, for sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. You don't have to love it. It's it's a little, it's painful. It's supposed to be painful. She's drawn very hurt here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the expression on her face on this last page before she storms off is, it's great. It's really hurting her. She hides herself when she cries, and then she runs away to hide her face more. And then Brant doesn't get it, and everybody else glares at him.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's a very sympathetic character. And then lightning hits outside.
Cacow!
Mm-hmm. Chiron notes that they're safe inside the inn. We learn a few things about the tavern, that it's not a destination. People don't decide to go to the inn at World's End. No, they end up there on their way to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that Brant's on his way to Chicago to change careers.
Mm-hmm. He's just checking out. He's got a job offer.
Oh, he's going to go in for like an interview.
Yeah, I guess.
But he doesn't have anything set up. He's using his vacation time to go check out a different job.
Mm-hmm.
And Chiron has his own sort of idea about what a reality storm is.
Yeah, I like this.
I posit that they are caused when two conflicting realities meet or overlap, in the same way natural storms are precipitated by the meeting of hot air and cold. It is, however, a difficult hypothesis to test empirically. This is only the second of these storms in my lifetime, and we centaurs consider ourselves long-lived folk indeed.
Yeah, so he's been here a bunch, but this is only the second reality storm that he's encountered. Clorican starts singing a song called I've Got Sixpence. It's an old English tune.
I've got sixpence, jolly, jolly sixpence. I've got sixpence to last me all my life. I've got tuppence to spend and tuppence to lend and tuppence to send home to my wife. Poor wife, no cares have I.
I like it. It's an old club banger. Just love getting down to sixpence.
It's an old traditional English tune, is what it is. I don't know how far back it goes. As far back as sixpence, I guess.
It's a club banger.
A club banger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can really grind to that. I could. I'm trying to come up with dance moves. What are the cool dance moves? What do the kids do these days? Do they still dab? I could dab to that. It's totally dated at this point.
Is it still called busting a move?
Yes.
Okay.
It certainly is called busting a move. If any teenagers listen to this podcast, don't comment on our Facebook, because apparently teenagers don't use Facebook anymore.
Comment on our Instagram.
Snapchat at us. Send a carrier pigeon.
Oh, that'd be the very, very old people.
No, that would be the very youngest teenagers. They've abandoned the internet entirely because of net neutrality, and so now they're sending carrier pigeons.
Mm,
yeah. Okay.
And ravens, like Game of Thrones?
Sure.
Yeah. Makes sense. Totally makes sense. In panel 4, we see the return of Stephen Brust, fantasy and sci-fi author. He's kind of famous for that hat that he's wearing there.
And he's back.
He was in the inn earlier, and now he sees something going on outside. And this is where we get the big reveal of this issue.
You think the goggle gnomes and the crawdaddies might be, like, characters of his?
Oh, they might be. They are behind him. I'm not familiar with his work. Somebody could let us know. That'd be great.
Yeah, I have no idea. He looks like that guy who's famous for doing the pornos.
Oh, God. Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what he looks like in this drawing.
Yeah. And they look out the window. And the sky is full of colors and swirls, and something's going on.
They all dropped acid. That's what's going on.
Yeah, they slipped some acid into what they were all eating at the World's End.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. The song that's being sung is written by Neil, and he calls it generic folk song. Ah, my love, he is a knight so bold, impressive in his ardor, or a minstrel, or a pirate with his thighs and arms so firm, with a mandolin or an angry grin and a dead wife in the larder. Generic folk song.
And somewhere about this point in the song, someone normally gets transformed into a loathly worm.
Wow. Singing the R's like that. That's talent.
Neil wrote it with more R's than I'm willing to count on the page. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to assume that was a rolled R.
Right.
Worm.
I would just go worm.
This is Clurican.
Sure. I'm sure his tongue is much more skilled than mine.
I'm sure he speaks with that rolled R's.
Oh,
for
okay.
emphasis.
Probably.
Implurkan.
Just to show it off. Yeah. And then we see Destiny in the sky. And a description from Brant of the big sky. There are just some places where the sky seems so much bigger. And this is definitely Destiny. He's carrying his book. He's wearing his robes.
Mm-hmm.
We find out as we turn the pages, he's leading a funeral march, it seems. There's a man with a flag and then people carrying a coffin.
Who's in the coffin?
Who's carrying the coffin?
Who's carrying the coffin?
Any ideas on who these people are?
No.
Okay.
I took my time.
Mm-hmm.
I considered. One of them does look like Pearl from Steven Universe.
I think this predates Steven Universe.
I'm just saying, Rebecca Sugar, I get it. I see where you're getting your inspo
mm-hmm.
from this weird hair on this character.
Okay.
In a suit as well. And we all know that Pearl eventually wears a tuxedo when she sings Isn't It Over? Yeah.
Should be an appropriate song for a funeral, I think.
Absolutely. She's singing about a person who's dead. If you haven't watched Steven Universe yet, people who are listening to us, just pause the podcast and go watch Steven Universe. No, finish the podcast, then go watch Steven Universe.
Yeah, I think we both love it. That show is one of our favorite bits of media out of the last 10 years or so.
If I had more time in my life, I would do a Steven Universe podcast.
Oh, yeah. My only problem is that I would not be able to keep up with some of the mega fans of the Steven Universe world. Like, they're just... They know so much. Mm-hmm. I consider myself, I know quite a bit because I'm with you all the time and you know quite a bit.
It's because I spend a lot of time on the Reddit.
Yeah.
And I dive deep, deep, deep into those theories mm-hmm. and those, those conspiracies. Anyway, so Pearl is definitely one of the pallbearers, but otherwise I don't know who the other ones are.
Okay. Well, it is a mystery.
The one on the front looks a little bit like Colonel Sanders.
Colonel Sanders?
Yeah.
I don't see a beard.
Does Colonel Sanders have a beard?
Yes.
Never mind. Doesn't look like Colonel Sanders. Looks like Quaker Oats? No, I don't know.
There's a redhead there.
Yeah, that's Pearl.
But who have we seen in the comics that has... If this is somebody we've seen before, who could this be?
Desire.
Who's got red hair that sticks up?
That sticks up?
That's what's going on here.
Kane.
Kane, actually. Yeah, that could be Kane. It doesn't really look like him. His face is quite long, but it's possible.
His head's turned down.
Mm-hmm. Could be Kane. Mm-hmm. Could be Loki. Remember, Loki has the shock of red hair from Season of Mists. Yeah.
Okay.
Not sure who the others are. I mean, I have other ideas, but only because I have read all the way through.
Oh.
But there's nothing much you can glean from this right now. This is supposed to be a little unknown.
Neato.
But scary. Any guesses on who's in the coffin?
Me. It's me in the coffin.
It's
the
you.
Reader. The reader is in the coffin.
Oh, and why would the reader be in the coffin?
Because the comic is cursed and you will die. No, because it's a representation of like the reality storm happens because the reader dies, and that's what happens to the people who get in the books. If you are someone who reads the books and then you die, the people in the books have a reality. It makes sense. It's just okay. It just makes sense if you don't think of time as being linear. You just have to think of time as a circle, and then it all makes sense. Okay.
Well, I certainly believe that this is not happening right now.
Yeah.
This is kind of a vision, right? Yeah. This is a vision of the reason for the reality storm.
Uh-huh. And all time happens all at the same time everywhere.
Right? I don't think it necessarily does. We've seen in The Shifting Places that time can cross over itself, right? Remember we had Marco Polo meeting people from different times, including Dream from different times?
Because all points in time are also at the same point in time.
I think it's better to say they cross over.
My rambling makes more sense if you're on acid.
Oh, okay. I'm not.
Neither am I.
It's not a requirement of this podcast either.
But it is our top tier Patreon goal.
I don't know who I was crying for, and I hated myself for it, but I couldn't look away. And then on the next page, another big spread with more people that we can definitely recognize.
Mm-hmm.
We can see, going from left to right in the back, we can see what is probably Merv Pumpkinhead.
Yep, definitely Merv Pumpkinhead.
Mm-hmm. And then, is that Wilkinson was the rat?
Mm-hmm, I think so. And next to him, right behind him, is the bird. I see the beak.
Oh, Wilkinson's a shrew, actually.
Yeah. And then the one next to him is the green bird with the girl's name, and I don't remember.
Luz.
Luz. So Luz is
that's Luz's nose, yes.
Yeah, that's Luz's beak.
Yeah, beak, nose, yeah.
I think next to Merv is Lucian.
Yeah, I think that could be Lucian.
The glass and little pointy beard. Mm-hmm. It's very tall. I think on the horse is Titania.
Definitely Titania. We've seen her looking green with that same headdress on. I think there's no doubt that that's her.
Next to the horse in the very front is Despair.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the back behind the horse's butt is Bast.
Mm-hmm. And above her is...
One of the ravens.
It could be Matthew, but beside the raven is Odin.
Yeah, so I think it's one of Odin's.
It could be one of Odin's ravens, yeah.
Well, Odin's ravens. Up in the sky is Angel.
Which is one of the angels ruling hell, I'm going to guess. We're seeing characters we've seen before, so I'm going to guess that that's who that is, not just some random angel.
Behind Odin, we've got Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Below that, I believe that's the Emperor of... San Francisco.
Emperor of the United States.
Yeah, but he lives in San Francisco.
Emperor Norton. Yeah.
Emperor Norton. Behind that, I think, is Fiddler's Green.
Mm-hmm.
Behind that is the big doggy dude from the land.
Martin Tenbones.
Martin Tenbones.
Hmm.
I don't know what the tall thing behind, like next to him is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It looks kind of reptilian. It could be a gargoyle.
That's it. That's got to be who it is.
Mm-hmm. Gregory?
Yeah, it's Gregory.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then over in the next page, the last two, Delirium and Death. And Brant falls in love with Death a little bit, like he knew her, like she was my oldest, dearest friend. And she is, because everybody meets Death when they're born.
And Death is the last one, always. Mm-hmm. And behind her, the moon becomes bloodier and bloodier.
Mm-hmm.
And bloodier.
And she's very, very, very sad. And the innkeeper notes, that was the last of the storm. It's over now. It'll be safe enough for you to leave. And she can't say. She recognized some of the people, the giants in the sky.
But she doesn't know them all.
Well, I don't know if she very specifically says, I cannot say.
As opposed to, I do not know.
Which isn't the same as I don't know.
Trixie.
Yeah.
And it's safe for them to leave, to go home.
Clurican is instantly sober.
I like that.
And is sad about it. Alas, no longer. I guess that's a fairy spell.
Probably.
Right? Yeah. And he has to head back to Fairy and report what he's seen and heard.
Our favorite mortician... I forget his name.
Petrifax.
Petrifax. He's like, hey, I want to come to Earth with you guys.
Yeah, he wants to go with Charlene.
But his boss is like, oh, no, you're not allowed to go.
And he wants to visit countless worlds and realms and cities and learn the knowledge and bring it back home to Letharge. Mm-hmm. And we have had a mention that once in a while, a member of Necropolis Letharge will go out into the world and travel and then bring back knowledge. So... Petrifax wants to be that person.
Yeah, but his master's like, oh, heck no, you're not doing that. No, no, no. And Petrifax is like, psh, I'm going with the centaur. And he climbs on the centaur's back and they ride off together. And he smiles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid boy. Charlene announces she's not going back.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about that as well. Like, the thing about staying is if she stays this place between worlds, she's not going to make her own stories this place between worlds. You know, her stories won't ever be about her. They'll be other people's stories she'll keep hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess so. Some of them were telling stories of other people. So I guess that's okay. But yeah, I had this weird feeling that like, What she should do is move on to another new world and make her own stories there,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to stay in this place and just listen to other people's stories. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, we don't know. Her story hasn't been told yet.
Yeah.
The innkeeper mentions she came here many years ago on her way to another journey. And when she tires of her work, that other journey still waits for her. So I guess that's true of Charlene as well. When she tires of working in the inn, she'll go on to whatever other story she wants to do.
Okay.
And when she says that, notice that there are extra arms behind her.
Mm-hmm.
There are many Hindu gods who have multiple arms.
Mm-hmm.
And we have heard that when gods die, they go somewhere else. They often go to dreaming,
mm-hmm.
but perhaps she's on her way to somewhere else. I don't know which goddess this god or goddess this is,
mm-hmm.
because there hasn't been enough information about it.
Hmm.
And I think it's kept deliberately vague.
Yeah.
And then Brant goes, and we find out he's been telling this story to a bartender.
Yeah. She's got a striped shirt, and she's got a weird pendant on her necklace.
Looks exactly like Nuala's pendant. Remember the pendant that somebody gave her?
Who is Nuala? Which one was Nuala?
Nuala is the elf girl who was given to Sandman.
Interesting.
Hmm.
It kind of looks like those kinds of pendants are the ones where you hold them up and you spin them, or that which direction they turn tells you, like, you essentially decide, like, I can't remember what they're called, but you hold them up and then you think about an answer you want to something, and if it turns clockwise, it means one thing, and if it turns counterclockwise, it means the other thing.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like a type of, it's like tarot cards.
It's like a magic 8-ball.
Yeah, kind of, but it only has two answers.
Oh, okay. A scrying necklace, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, and so they turn depending, and it's supposed to tell you, you know.
Yeah, it could be.
Which thing to do, yes or no, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, depending on the direction it turns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be Nuala there.
That could be Nuala.
It could just be somebody who is got the same kind of necklace as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not sure.
It's just kind of a distinctive necklace to choose to draw.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Thessaly, because Thessaly had such long hair.
Yeah.
It'd be weird for her to have short hair.
I don't think she'd cut it. I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she does have the big glasses. They're not as round as Thessaly's.
Yeah. Whereas I could see Nuala choosing to look like this,
mm-hmm.
in a glamour.
It, you know, it also could be that this is not our world that Brant is from.
Mm.
It could be that this is kind of an alternate world, Thessaly.
Maybe.
Wearing the necklace and having slightly different glasses and having shorter hair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think it ever gets revealed, I'll be honest. Anyway, Brant woke up in a McDonald's parking lot in the car, Charlene's car, which wasn't even scratched despite the giant crash that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out as well, it's not Charlene's car, it's his car, and Charlene doesn't even exist anymore, but he knows that she did.
Mm-hmm.
So either his reality kind of closed up behind her to make it seem like she didn't exist because she left, or possibly he returned to a different reality.
Where she never lived.
Where she never lived.
Yeah, it's either that, either the reality sealed up behind her, mm-hmm. Or it's one where she never lived. Also, we have glossed over this incredibly important thing.
What's that?
He's grown a ponytail.
Yeah, I know.
We cannot forget that he has grown a ponytail.
Yeah. Yeah, that hair that he's got that's hanging down in his eyes eventually got long enough that he pulls it back.
Mm-hmm.
Means it's been a while.
Yeah, he abandoned his whole Bill Pullman look and went for Steven Seagal.
Gugh. Go back. Go back.
The bartender asked him if it had ever occurred to him that he'd imagined all of it.
Mm-hmm. Often, but then I remember looking up at those people in the sky. I remember crying for my father. I remember Charlene. Nobody else does, but I do.
Hmm.
You know, he remembers a person that he felt up at the party. He remembers a person he felt bad about when she brought it up at the inn at World's End.
Mm-hmm.
I can totally understand, like, if somebody that you knew suddenly disappeared and nobody remembered them, you'd be, no, but I remember all those things.
Mm. And she says we got to close up.
Mm-hmm.
She plays closing time.
Yep.
And as they're leaving, she just explains that she liked having his company.
Yeah.
She tells him to drive safe, but he doesn't drive anymore. Just feels weird. And he doesn't do it.
Yep. Just weird if he's in LA.
Yeah.
Not having a car in LA is it's danger.
Not driving in LA is pretty.
It's just a giant sprawl.
Yeah.
And she says good night and watches him go into the darkness.
Yeah.
So that's it for World's End. Next up, we have the Kindly Ones.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember who they are?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you have any predictions for what happens in the Kindly Ones?
Yeah. The Kindly Ones are the Weird Sisters.
Yeah.
And the next book is going to be about them prophesizing to people about what's going to happen to them. Oh, it's going to be about who dies. Oh. And is in the procession.
Oh, okay.
They're going to, it's all going to be about like them prophesizing the person who's going to die.
Okay.
And then maybe about the story is going to be about trying to change that or trying to accept that or trying mm-hmm. to work around it or something. But I think the core premise of the next story is going to be about the person who died in that funeral procession.
Chiron did note that it could be about two realities overlapping.
And the Weird Sisters see through all the different realities or something, or maybe probably. They're seeing the wrong reality, or maybe it's, I don't know, but okay. they're, it's about them saying who's going to die mm-hmm. in that story, or the end result of their advice is that the person dies from that procession.
Who do you think should die?
Who's in the coffin?
Who do you think it is that may or may not die?
Number one prediction,
yeah.
it's us, the reader. Number two okay. prediction, it's Dream.
Okay. Well, I guess we're going to have to find out next episode.
Yeah!
You've been dreaming of The Sandman, issue 56, World's End, chapter 6, World's End. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you tell your friends about us. Our theme music is Onerai by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Joe Foljam. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.